When you entered the property this morning, I'm sure you noticed that there's something going on here. Tents, margaritas, tarpaulins, tables. There's still more to come, you know. The balloons aren't here yet. The flowers are scheduled to arrive this morning. Of course, the food. And many of you are involved in these preparations, so you know we're preparing for our 50th anniversary, our golden anniversary, celebrated tomorrow and on Monday. But we take a moment to leave all that aside and to listen more deeply to the Word. This is a good Advent exercise because, yes, our preparations here are not preparations for Christmas or for our Christmas party, but it's the same. When you're preparing for Christmas, there's a lot to do. There's a lot of activity. There's decorations. There's things to plan, cleaning. And it's easy to get caught up in all the activity, and this interior work gets pushed aside or delayed. So let's do the exercise that is part of Advent. Set aside all the concerns we have, all the work we have to do, all the details, set aside those things and take a moment to just be with God. That's what we're doing here in this Mass. In fact, it's First Friday today, so today is a day to turn once again to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, to find refuge in His heart. The scriptures today dwell on the passage from blindness to seeing. The pattern is well established already in Advent that the first reading is the prophecy and the gospel is the fulfillment of the prophecy. So here we have a prophecy from Isaiah, and there are many things in this prophecy, but the key verses are these. On that day, and that expression "on that day" comes up a lot in Advent, it's a indication of the day of the Messiah. On that day, when the Messiah comes, when the Messiah reigns. On that day, the deaf shall hear the words of a book, and out of gloom and darkness the eyes of the blind shall see. The lowly will ever find joy in the Lord, and the poor rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. By the way, when it says the lowly will ever find joy, the Hebrew word is anawim. The anawim will ever find joy in the Lord. Now, these expressions of healing of the deaf and the blind and the giving joy to the lowly, the anawim, are couched in a whole series of prophecies which are not so specific about physical healing. There's this business about Lebanon being turned into an orchard, then the overthrowing of the tyrant, the overcoming of corruption, and then the raising up of the chosen people, their restoration. So in the context of all these things, we might be tempted to say, well, this is just symbolic language, this talk about deaf hearing and blind people seeing. And perhaps, I don't know, who knows what the Jews of Isaiah's time thought when they heard this prophecy. Is it symbolic language? Is it a poetic expression of good things to come? Well, maybe it's that, but when the Messiah actually does come, he actually does heal the blind, and that's what we read about in today's gospel. Two blind men approach Jesus, and he heals them, and they can see. So it's a clear fulfillment of this prophecy. Out of gloom and darkness, the eyes of the blind shall see. The story of the healing of the blind man is interesting in this sense. The blind men are quite aggressive about this. Jesus passes by. It's not Jesus who approaches them or speaks to them. They follow him and they cry out to him, "Son of David, have pity on us." They're quite insistent that he have pity on them. I point this out because we know that the initiative for our restoration, our salvation, is always from God. He the reason why he comes is to save us. But we also have a responsibility to follow him. to respond to his presence. And that's what these blind men do. They cry out to him. Son of David is a messianic title. They honor him as the Messiah, and they ask him to have pity. He enters the house, and they follow him into the house. They approach him, and then that's when Jesus finally says something to them in this account. Do you believe that I can do this? It's a question of faith, right? Do you have faith? Does your faith give the openness for God to do great work? And they respond, yes. Yes, we believe you could do it. Have pity on us. And so he heals them. Let it be done for you according to your faith. Stressing faith here is important because faith is a deeper kind of seeing. And we who are, for the most part, not blind, maybe they have some vision problems, but we're not physically blind, but we are being called in Advent to grow in faith, to see with eyes of faith. That's the more important thing. As this account tells us, these blind men, they did have faith. Even before they had physical sight, they had spiritual sight. They could see with faith that Jesus was the Son of David and that he had power to heal them. So that's faith. And Jesus, honoring their faith, seeing an opening in their inner life, grants them a physical healing. So beautiful fulfillment of the prophecy, another indication of who this Jesus is and how we are to respond to him, how we are to prepare the way for him with faith, with confidence in him, and with a kind of aggressiveness to pursue him, to follow him, to not give up when he doesn't say anything, and not give up when he seems to be continuing on his journey. No, follow him, like these blind men. It wasn't easy to follow him. They were blind. I don't even know how they did it. How did they get into the house? I don't know. They acted on faith, not on sight. Now, as I was reflecting on this passage, a couple of thoughts came to mind in relation to my experience of being in Fatima, the great shrine. Of course, the land of Portugal is known for its faith, and the little village where the three shepherd children came from was a place of great faith. The children were schooled in the faith. Even though they were not educated, they didn't know how to read, but they knew that they should pray the rosary, and they knew their faith as far as little children can know it. Anyway, one of the experiences they had, or I remember Lucia's description of what they experienced in the first apparition of Mary. At the end of their brief encounter, Mary opened her hands like this, and heavenly light shone from her hands to the children. And they felt penetrated by light. And Lucia's expression of it is what sticks in my mind. We saw ourselves in God more clearly than we can see ourselves in a mirror. We saw ourselves in God. See, that light made it possible for them to see more. Now, this is why it comes to mind. They weren't blind, but they didn't see themselves nearly as clearly as they did once Our Lady granted them this heavenly light. They saw themselves in God more clearly than they could see themselves in a mirror. So I think this indicates the kind of seeing that Advent is inviting us to enter into, to see ourselves in God. And this is an area in which very, very many people are blind. Physically we can see, but do we see ourselves in God? Do we see ourselves in the plan of God? Do we recognize our place in the love and mercy of God? Do we see ourselves as God sees us? Very often we don't. We either are filled with pride and independence, and we think that we're in charge of our lives and we don't need God, or we're rejecting ourselves, condemning ourselves. We think we're so sinful that God can't love us, and neither can anyone else. And we distort everything. See how blind we can be interiorly. So we need the healing of our inner sight. Really, it's a healing of our conscience, our inner vision. Not only vision of ourselves, if that's important, we have to see ourselves in God, but but our vision of others who are also children of God, who are also icons of God, and to see how God's plan is unfolding in time, which is not always easy to see because there's so much disorder in the world. But God sees beyond disorder. He sees his eternal plan. And that's what he wants us to see. Okay, so that's one idea that came from reflecting on the children of Fatima. Another idea came back to my mind when I read this last line of the gospel. And Jesus warned them sternly, "See that no one knows about this." But they went out and spread word of him through all that land. Now, he told them sternly not to do it, and they went out and did it. It doesn't say what Jesus' reaction to that was. I don't know if he was offended or if he kind of expected that they would. But how could they not say it? I mean, they were blind, and now they can see. What are they supposed to tell people? So, I mean, but he did warn them sternly not to say it. Anyway, what came to my mind was, again, the three children, after the first apparition of Our Lady, Lucia especially, knew that they shouldn't tell anybody about what happened. And her two younger cousins, Francisco and Jacinta, she said to them, don't tell anybody. Because Lucia was 10, Lucia, she was 10 years old, and she knew that this is not the kind of thing people are going to believe. But the little ones, I don't know if they had that kind of reflection yet. But they all agreed, okay, we'll keep it a secret, we'll keep it a secret. And Lucia really emphasized this, don't tell anyone, don't even tell your mother, she told Jacinta, don't even tell your mother. Stern warning, just like Jesus. Well, what happened? As soon as Jacinta got home, as soon as her mother got home, she told her right away, we saw a beautiful lady. What a beautiful lady. She couldn't stop it. She's a 7-year-old girl, and she saw the most beautiful thing she's ever seen in her whole life. She can't contain it. Well, what a beautiful lady. What a beautiful. She kept on saying it over and over. What a beautiful lady. And so the mother said, what are you talking about? We saw this beautiful lady in the Copa. Okay, so now if you say, well, you can't really blame that 7-year-old Jacinta for blurting out this experience of having met the most beautiful woman she's ever met, Our Lady of Fatima. Even though she was told to be silent and she promised to be silent, she broke that promise and she forgot what she had been told. So it seems similar to what we see in this gospel. There's something about the goodness of God which is impossible to hold back on. It's impossible to keep it a secret. It should be impossible. The wonder of God's works, the good news, the gospel, impels us to make it known. We can't keep it a secret. In a certain sense, we can't even help ourselves if we have faith. And if our eyes are open to what God does. If we're not blind, well then we're not mute either. If we have faith, that means we see, and if we see, we have something to say to others. So, together with the little children, together with these healed the blind men, together with the whole church, let us open the eyes of our hearts with faith, and let us make known the goodness of God.